so-called meat and potatoes of the bill, expect to see several weeks of mudslinging and sausage making as programs get cut, moved, changed, and rearranged. After the Senate approves its final version of the bill, it will move on to the conference committee, where it will be merged with the House version of the bill. Expect to see the final product come down to the line in April of 2008. Until then, stay tuned. Thanks for listening. That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to an in-depth discussion of the 2007 Farm Bill. Contributions this week came from Molly Stentz and MJ LaPlay. Production assistance came from KP Whaley, all of WORT Community Radio, Madison, Wisconsin. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts, to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Sarah Brown for WORT in Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts. Yeah, he's so
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org.
On the anniversary of the execution of white abolitionist and race traitor John Brown, participate in an anti-racist discussion group. Sunday, December 2nd at 3 p.m., Free School Santa Cruz offers Being John Brown in an effort to restart a dialogue and explore what white identity might look like, what anti-racism means to us in this community. What do words like ally, guilt, privilege, and identity mean to you? How can we move beyond hand-wringing and easily professed solidarity? John Brown committed himself to direct action against slavery, including work with the Underground Railroad and resistance against slavery's expansion. Eventually, he was executed by the state as a traitor for his role in a raid on a military outpost in an attempt to procure more arms for the battle against slavery and slave owners. The facilitated discussion and workshop will take place at the UCSC TreeSit Autonomous Zone, Science Hill. All are more than welcome, but the discussion will be focused towards the experiences of white-skinned people. Bring a book to suggest, a film to share, and a readiness to confront the racism within and in the communities we inhabit. This Sunday, December 2nd, at 3 p.m.
Ahora voy a comenzar a ver si puedo o no puedo. A ver si puedo cantar o a medio verso me quedo. Ahora voy a comenzar a ver si puedo o no puedo. A ver si puedo cantar o a medio verso me quedo.
Soy pescador.
And welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. It's November 29th, 2007, Thursday evening. A few moments late, but hey, it gets dark earlier these days, and you have to blunder around in the dark to find your way into the studio. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Freak Radio, some call it. That's freakradio.org if you're listening to us on the computer, or 101.1 FM if you're listening on the radio. If you want to call in at any time, the number is fairly easy to remember. It's 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. There's also an alternate number in case there's a problem with that number. Hopefully there won't be today. That number is 469-3119. I'm Robert Norris. My show runs for 2 hours, 6 to 8, followed by From the Cream to the Dregs for all you musical fans, for tunes from the nostalgic past with Uncle Dennis. On my show, I'm concerned with local political issues, particularly around homeless folks. And I also delve into the war in Iraq every so often, distasteful a subject as it is, and futile as it feels our efforts are at ending it. That's an important issue for us locally. I'm particularly concerned about what we can do locally about these issues and what we can do to change policies to expose corruption, to expose local tyranny. Well, it's all very well to babble on about Bush and Cheney. The question is, what do we do about Coonerty and Matthews, the new mayor and vice mayor of Santa Cruz? So without further ado, or actually with a little bit of further ado, I'm going to roll into some interviews I did at the Thanksgiving Homeless Meal, which is held every year at the Vets Hall, long lines, turkey inside. I didn't actually get inside this year. I was outside at a table taking the names of potential plaintiffs for the sleeping ban lawsuit. That was a week ago. And in fact, attorney David Beauvais is going to meet with those plaintiffs on Saturday, day after tomorrow, at 4 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson Center for all of you plaintiffs out there or anyone interested in supporting the federal lawsuit against the sleeping ban, I should say, our lawsuit in federal court against the city's Thou Shalt Not Sleep After 11 O'Clock ordinance. And there's a movie at 4 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson Center. It's free. You can get free popcorn. It's called Dark Days. It's about the homeless in New York City. I maybe read a little bit about it once I jump online to see what's cooking with that. But while I kind of prep all that, I'm going to bounce right into the interviews from Thanksgiving. There were some really interesting interviews. A lot of folks having a lot of problems with the authorities. Coonerty's cops, as you might call them, are in fact going after poor and homeless people who have no alternative but to sleep outside. Their property is being destroyed. Their peace and their health are being disturbed, and we need to have the kind of lawsuits that have been successful in Fresno, San Diego, and Los Angeles, and it looks like that's the direction we're heading in. And if you want to call in on this issue, again, the number is 427-3772. If you want to call off air and want to reach me perhaps with private information or just because you want to talk to me or you have other subjects you want to talk about, 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. HUFF, of course, is also an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is the group that meets every Wednesday at the county building that I am affiliated with. And we also do protests every Sunday in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, Coonerty's Bookstore, where we attempt to alert the public to the kind of funny business that's going on while it's business as usual at the bookstore Santa Cruz with the Coonerty clan. Anyway, here's some interviews, some tape, some discussions from the Thanksgiving meal, the line in front of the Vets Hall from a week ago.
We're talking with
Michael Strong.
Michael, is it okay if we broadcast this for free radio?
Absolutely.
Now, tell me what happened.
Okay, me and my wife were temporarily camping up in the Poganips, and I had purchased three brand new tents, one for me, one for my friend, and one for my other friend. And they were all camoed. It was very subdued. You know, we didn't even leave a cigarette butt outside. You know, we're very respectful, try to keep quiet. It was only temporary. Rangers knew this. You know, we don't use drugs. You know, we're just here temporarily because of lack of work. You know, I lost
my job. What kind of work do you
usually do? I'm actually in construction, but I was the manager for a restaurant up in Santa Cruz, and I got unlawfully terminated on my day off while I was picking up my paycheck.
Restaurant was?
Scotts Valley KFC.
Uh-huh.
And Anyway, so we ended up coming home that night. It was roughly about, just about dark, you know, just going to come home. And all of our stuff, all the tent poles were broken and thrown in the woods. They stabbed holes in my air mattress. They ripped up my tents. They threw my stuff all over the place. And they left me a ticket that says, you need to move in you need to move in 3 days and clean up your garbage out of the ravine. Well, the next morning, we ended up going down. There was no garbage in the ravine. He was just ticked, you know, it was Ranger Wallace's. It was Ranger Wallace.
And how do we know it was Ranger Wallace?
Because it was his signature.
On the ticket?
Yes.
Did they leave a time on the ticket?
Yeah, they gave us 3 days.
And did they leave a time when they actually had come and given you the citation?
No, they did not.
And where did this happen?
It was in Lower Meadow of the Poconos.
And what day was this?
This was roughly about 6 days ago.
Okay.
The date was 16th, 17th.
Now, was this was a warning to move or a citation?
It was a warning to move.
And did you subsequently get a citation or just a warning to move?
Just a warning to move, but we have received one camping ticket before, which actually, you know, my wife got it while I was at work.
In the same place, or?
No, we moved on that one because they gave us a ticket and we were supposed to move, you know.
Your wife's name?
Annette Strong.
And where did this ticket happen?
Same Poconos, only it was about 1,050 meters, you know, away from where we used to camp, you know. I have a hard time, especially closing a restaurant, walking up the hill, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, after being on my feet all night. So we could not, like, go way up the tracks where everybody else camps, where, you know, there's a lot of trouble and everything. It seemed a little more mild down there, a little more peaceful. There was no problems. You know, it was a safe place. It was a happy camp, you know. Hey, we clean up after ourselves. We don't leave garbage. We all haul down all our garbage every morning, you know. Like I said, we don't do drugs. We don't do anything. I'm trying to work my way out of the situation. But no, they break my stuff. They just straight broke it. Why?
So can you itemize the approximate cost of what stuff they took of yours?
About $650. Yeah, they even took a tent pole that they broke and stabbed it through our air mattresses.
Would you like to make a claim against the city for that?
I'm going to.
Okay, well, here's a guy who has a questionnaire. I'd like, maybe you can fill it out in more detail. Again, we've been talking with
Michael Strong.
Going to be in town for a while, Michael?
I'll never leave.
And have you written down your name on this list yet?
Absolutely.
Excellent. And can you also add to the list that you suffered some property damage of $650? And is your wife's name on this list?
Yes, it is. Annette Strong.
Okay.
And it's not just property damage, you know, it's just mental anguish. You know, I mean, it was very cold that night. It was like one of the first cold snaps that we had, and we just froze, you know, because they ripped holes in our tents, you know, nothing would do any good.
And they offered you no legal alternative for the place to go?
No, we ended up actually going to the Armory, which, thank God, actually is open now.
And how is the Armory treating people?
The Armory is great. It's sad they don't have showers there, but, you know, in the morning you at least have some hot water to wash up with and a mirror. You know, we have a few troublemakers there. It's not too bad. You know, it's really peaceful. It's almost warm and comforting, you know, a little TV, you know.
What's the waiting time to get to the Armory?
Waiting time is every day. You go to the Armory, you sign up between 4 and 5, you can be there. You got to have an ID, or you can go to Marcus at the River Street Shelter and get an ID. They'll take your photograph happily, and you can go. There's a maximum of 100 people right now, and we only have 40. Last night, the count was 40, so still plenty of room. You know, it's been cold, so people need to know if they need to go there. You know, there's plenty of space. They offer blankets, you know, some hot water if you have some tea or some coffee in your personal belongings, a cup, you know, and a microwave. You know, it's not too bad, you know.
So you've been going there tonight?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
That would mean, of course, you can't speak on free radio because our radio show is from 6 to 8 tonight, although we'll be playing this tape, so you'll be speaking sort of.
That sounds great.
And also we have a show on Sunday. If you'd like to come in on Sunday morning and speak on the air, you can meet me at the 7-Eleven. I'll give you one of the cards for free radio in case you have some other experiences or you want to talk more about this experience on the air.
I'd love to. Yeah.
These are the show times, places to meet. You'll have to call me the day before, Saturday, and say, I want to meet you at the 7-Eleven, which is where we meet every 15 minutes for the show time, which will be about 9:15
a.m.?
A.m.
A.m.? Okay, great. All right. Sunday, I'll be there.
Sounds good. Thank you. We've been talking with
Michael Strong.
Hey, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. So we just got the word from Damone of Homies for the Homeless that you had a camp destroyed. Well, actually, we talked to you a moment ago.
Yes.
But we haven't talked to you. What's your name?
Annette Strong.
And Annette, you and your partner here were...
Husband.
We're in the Poganip and came back and found your camp in tatters, right?
Yeah, they left a three-day notice, but they're supposed to give you 3 days before they take your camp away. We had a neat camp, a clean camp, not one cigarette butt in the camp, and everything, all the pools were destroyed, all the tents were destroyed, completely... Everything was all out of our tents, all over the place, and he left the note. He had the gall to say, clean up your mess.
You're not talking about Chief Ranger John Wallace, are you?
Most certainly I am.
Now, he actually signed the note?
Yes. No, he didn't sign by his name, but we know who it was. Because I can tell the way he makes his P's on the notices.
You know his P's and Q's.
Yes. People have been camping for years know his P's and Q's and taught me that.
Now, have you heard this happening to anybody else you know?
Constantly.
So any other people by name that this happened to?
Matt, God, there's so many homeless people that have told me. I can't even think right now.
I've given your husband, whose name is?
Michael Strong.
Mike, some flyers to give out.
Yes.
I'm also going to give you some cards to give out if people want to call Free Radio to talk about their experiences during my show times.
I will hand them out, actually, very much, because it happens, you know, 2-3 times a week.
Hand them out at the armory.
Yeah.
Because most of them are there, too, because their stuff got messed up.
Yeah, this got stopped. You know,
it's what we're trying to do. Yeah.
Destruction of private property, and it's actually taking away, you know, our amendment rights to keep warm and be able to sleep. Come on, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. It's horrible.
So, you know, we're also trying to arrange to have kind of people staying in contact with homeless people over a certain area, going in and finding out whether they've been hassled, whether they've been ticketed,
yep,
whether they're being pursued by cops or threatened, whether they've lost property. And we're thinking of dividing up the city into different zones and having people taking care of those different zones and then having a meeting generally, finding out what's going on. What do you think of that idea?
I think that actually is good, because there is more to a definition than just being homeless. There's certain levels of it. Certain levels of being homeless and everything. You know, there's certain areas of where homeless live, and it's mainly a rash in most certain areas, you know, from what I know. But down at the shelter and the people that I've learned, you know, got to know over the years, you know, I hear it from them all the time, know them very well, and they're not lying. You know, this is happening.
Can we get you also to come to a HUF meeting or to a human rights organization meeting? Human rights organization meets Saturday up there at the Firefly Cafe. Do you know where that is?
Not right offhand, but
131 Front Street. But she does.
Yes.
It's at 2:00 on Saturday, so it'll be the day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
No. Yes. The day after tomorrow. And that's at 2:00. And then on next Wednesday, we have a HUF meeting. So come to that, or to the Human Rights Organization meeting, and we'll talk more about this, do some more planning, and drink coffee as well.
We got tea?
Might have tea.
Yeah, we have to do that just to have human rights.
Yeah
well, that's...
This is supposed to be America.
We got
to
fight for it, you know?
Well, it's George Bush's America and Emily Riley's Santa Cruz. She's our mayor.
Especially what I call it. Nazism.
She does a great job, too, from what I understand.
Emily Riley?
I guess.
Yeah, she did a great job of making sure that people can't sleep at night, unfortunately.
Oh, she's
the mayor.
Thinking of the other lady.
I'm thinking of the other lady that's writing the book. I'm sorry. I forgot her name right off hand. I wish I could remember.
Okay, well,
yeah.
Thank you. Did you say Ranger Wallace did approach you at one point?
Yeah, he said, get out here right now. He didn't tell me who he was. He goes, you know who I am. And this is like the second time I've ever met the man. And I told him, you're not my dad. You cannot talk to me like that. I said, legally, I do not have to get out of my tent. And I opened up the thing. I said, just give me a ticket. And he proceeded to give me a bunch of crap about everything. And I kind of told him off about what people thought of him. And he said, people either love him or they hate him. Which is ironic. But he told me to get out within one day. He didn't give me a 3-day notice, which is legal. The day before, he gave me a 3-hour notice.
And did he give you a citation that day?
No, the second day they did. For smoking, I didn't have a cigarette with. And I use an ashtray in my tent very carefully.
Using an ashtray without a permit?
Yeah.
There you go. You've got to go to City Hall to get an ashtray permit. Just kidding.
I
wish I were.
But she wasn't even smoking at the time.
That's like I think, $100-some, almost $200 ticket there. But, you know, they can take it to collections, and I'll take it to trial if the city really wants to waste their money on this junk.
The day before that happened, I was actually there with her, and I just had gotten dressed in my work uniform. It's all black, you know, because I'm food service business, you know. And he told me to sit on the ground. I said, no, I can't. He demanded that I sit on the ground. No, I cannot get my uniform dirty. I have to go to work. He said, oh, I don't give a shit.
This is John Wallace.
John Wallace.
Wait a minute, our chief ranger?
Yes.
Yeah.
The man who's paid such a huge amount each year to protect the rights of our forests?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He doesn't protect anything. All he does is goes around and just...
Foliage. I don't ever see him looking at trails and doing, like nature stuff. All they're doing is chasing after campers and throwing them out and destroying their stuff. I think Ranger Wallace is probably the only one that I know of that does that. There are a few other rangers that at least have a little respect, at least sit down and talk with you and say, hey, blah, 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 you know, can you fix your situation? Which, you know, you explain to them right now, I can't. Because it costs a lot to live here, you know. And I'm from here. I'm not leaving Santa Cruz.
But I did see him cut a whole lot of crap down that was not a part of a fire prevention. You know, they
so
did the fire prevention, mowed the grassy areas and everything, cut some shrub back, but they just gutted it this year. It's just shredded. You know, so it's like, okay, well, they're hiding in this, so let's just cut this down.
They
you know, it's part of
nature. They took a guy's camp down. It's been there like 5 years or so, and this dude's an old dude.
On
pretty much a home.
Property.
One lady called him a homesteader, right? You know, she like didn't seem to have a problem with him, and all of his stuff got taken a week ago. I don't want to say his name because I don't know if he'd find that appropriate for me to use his name on, you know.
Yeah, tell him about this and ask him to call into the show or be a part of the lawsuit.
Got it right here.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Annette. You're welcome.
Okay, well, we're talking with
Ashman.
And Ashman, you're a local man without lodging at the moment?
Or? Yes, that's right.
How long have you been outdoors?
Since the 8th of November, 2007.
So you've been about a year now?
No, this year.
Oh, this year, 2007, so not very long.
No, a couple of weeks.
Now, how did this happen?
I just left my site, my camping site, and I came back and found a ticket to move there, or a warning to move there.
And where was your campsite?
It was off River Street, and this was the second time. First time I was parked in West Harvey Park,
mm-hmm.
and I again got a ticket to move there. And I tried to clean up after myself every time. I found other people's stuff there also that I cleaned up. I believe in the Burning Man Playa kind of ethic that, you know, we shouldn't leave trash around.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to camp cleanly in a sustainable way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people should be allowed to camp as long as they're responsible.
And what happened on November 8th that put you in a position where you had to be camping out?
You could say perfect storm or result of bad choices or bad luck. But I ran out of money and had to. I could not pay rent at the place I was living at.
What kind of rent were you paying?
I was paying $925 a month.
Were you working or were you savings? Or?
I was working. And
what kind of work?
I was a programmer.
Uh-huh.
Still am. And I'm hopeful to get off the street very soon, actually.
Has this happened to you before or is this the first time?
I would say this is the first time.
And Santa Cruz lured you... Why?
I always wanted to be near the ocean. I read a book about radical self-acceptance, and that said, be near the ocean. Living in Redwood City, I would come down here on weekends, and I find this a beautiful area, a wonderful natural place. And Redwood City is just very concrete and landlocked, and I find it calming to be in the woods or near the ocean here. And
now, would you think if you went back to Redwood City, would you still be in the same plight, same situation?
I don't think so. No, I would probably not want to go back to Redwood City.
But if you did go back there, would you be able to find housing? Or?
I'm hoping to become not homeless very soon. I have some interviews going on. And
you're in Santa Cruz.
Well, I have some interviews that involve work over the internet. So
you'll be able to retain your residence here in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
So you say then that you're camped out for a couple of weeks, and did you have any encounters with the police or anybody like that?
No, I didn't have any encounters with the police. They came and dismantled my tent a few times in my absence, and I had one stove missing. I don't know who removed it from my tent.
And did you ever receive a note from the Ranger Wallace or any other official agency telling you to move or anything of that sort?
Yes, I've received two of these notes telling me to move, and there have always been 72-hour notices.
And was your property either destroyed or, seized or otherwise injured as a consequence or in subsequent response to this?
No, not really. I just found one stove missing from my campsite, but otherwise they would just dismantle my tent, basically.
Dismantling, like was it wasn't tattered, it was just taken down?
Yeah, it was taken down. Rather roughly, I might say, you know, causing some minor damage to it.
Now, do you think it was done by official authorities, or was it possibly done by somebody else?
I have no idea about that. All I know is I've received two tickets to move. So,
and tickets meaning warnings, but not apparent requirements to appear in court.
That's correct.
And again, we've been talking with
Ashwin.
Thank you for your story, and please stay in touch with us. We know we have Huff meetings and Human Rights Organization meetings, and Free Radio will be broadcasting your story.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Robert.
Talking with
Crazy Mary.
And what's happening, CM?
All right. I was on the sidewalk across from the grog shop, panhandling.
And now, where is the grog shop?
Ocean Street.
Okay, and this is near McDonald's, or...?
Yeah, it's about a block away.
Okay.
Anyway, and one of the employees came out and said, you can't be on our property. I looked at her, I said, I'm on a public sidewalk. So when I went, followed her back to Finn's Coffee, which just opened.
Okay. I've heard some complaints about Finn's Coffee.
Yes, I'm making a complaint. She held the door closed and says, you can't be in here. I says, what the... Why? Are you harassing home? Was now too.
Happy
anyway,
Thanksgiving.
And then the owner come out. He goes, "What's your name, Ann?" I said, "No, it's Mary." He goes, flips his cell phone open because he followed me around the where the they had the butt cam. I was getting snipes for my friend, and I was gonna go check their recyclables in their trash can. He goes, "I'm calling the cops." I says, "You can call the cops. They're my friends." Anyway, he said. He said that. He told me that he called the cops and goes, I'm calling on Mary because she's trespassing and belligerent. I looked at him and I said, you know what? You don't even have to do that. I'm leaving. So therefore, I went and hid in McDonald's dumpster when the cops came and they didn't see me. So
in other words, he used a false police report to drive you away.
Yeah, and they also harassed Hawk, who's a Marine. They told him they didn't want to serve his kind, whatever that means. Crazy Valerie gets to go in there and get coffee, but the rest of us don't, so go figure. The owner's name, by the way, is Brian.
Maybe we should set up a table outside Brian's and see what's cooking. Or what's brewing, perhaps.
I don't want to deal with it.
Right.
He'll get his karma.
All right. Well, thank you for the update, Mary.
Okay.
All right.
Happy Thanksgiving.
All right. If anybody's heard more complaints about Finn's, please call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number for Free Radio Santa Cruz.
No.
So we have a confidential source has told us that there may not be enough food this year for all the folks in line.
We've been serving for 20 years.
And you've been around, so you know what's happening. I'm not going to reveal this man's identity, however.
But, in fact, there did turn out to be enough food for everybody at Thanksgiving. At least that was the final report I got.
I have a whisk broom in hand cleaning up the area. You're just
not even doing it.
So we're talking with?
Sheree Rosa.
And, Sheree, you have a report about the new Flynn's, is it called? The coffee place on Ocean, which I've not been to, actually.
Yeah, well, they're expensive anyway.
Yeah.
But I was just walking past the window.
I think it's Finn's, not Flynn's, although I haven't been in there.
And I stopped and talked to this one person, and the lady turned around to come out and turned and goes, you can't be here. You're panhandling. I wasn't even panhandling. I was talking to a friend. So anybody walks by there and they see you like at McDonald's or something like that, you're not allowed anywhere on that property.
Where exactly is Flynn?
It's on Ocean across the street from the Grog.
Okay, which is how far from McDonald's?
Just right around the corner.
And it's actually on Ocean or right around the corner from Ocean?
It's on Ocean and what's that side street that Grog is on?
But in any case, that's kind of where it is.
Hubbard.
Yeah. Okay, well, has anybody gotten cited by them as a consequence of all these concerns about people? I mean, if you're on the public sidewalk, they can't do anything to you.
Well, that's what I told the lady, and she turned around and says, no, they own it because they built it.
She's wrong, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah. You're right, she's wrong.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it is true it's illegal to panhandle within 14 feet of a building. And so if you're panhandling on the sidewalk, that can be illegal. But if you're there, if you're standing, if you're walking, if you're on a chair, you can't sit within 14 feet of a building.
Yeah, although, I know, just panhandling rules.
Right, or even sitting is illegal.
Yeah, but I just walked by talking to a friend.
And actually, very technically, you can sit on a chair, which you brought with you, let's say, but you can't sit on the sidewalk.
Well, you're homeless. You have no rights. Keep that in mind.
Yeah,
we'll have you arrested tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm understanding.
Plus, you're a woman. You have even less rights. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, then.
Thanks, Robert.
All right.
We're talking with... You're ever ready? Okay, talking into...
We're talking to...
Bear.
And Bear, you're like a little three sheets to the wind, but we hope you can give us a coherent report.
Well, the coherent report of three sheets in the wind, as I assume to be, is the fact that the homeless are being sprayed. Look at the back of my jacket.
It looks, actually, it's got sort of, it looks like something
sprayed.
Different color, a kind of a lighter color, your red
polka
jacket.
Polka dots everywhere. I got sprayed. They're spraying the homeless to get rid of us.
No, it's just to make sure you don't mate with the wrong people. It's to change your mating habits.
Shit. Just about when I was going to butt fuck you.
Well, my butt is here, but I'm afraid I've got protective gear
I'm
on.
I'm telling you what, man.
And, of course, my little joke was about the light brown apple moth pheromone spraying, which supposedly is not a toxic pesticide, according to those who support the spraying, but rather a way of simply disrupting the mating habits by attracting the males either at the wrong time or to the wrong gender or to the wrong direction. I'm not entirely sure of the details, but that was the origin of that joke. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has been trying to get the advocates, the opponents of the spraying, to also raise their voices against the situation for homeless people specifically. In other words, if there is spraying in, well, not supposed to resume until February or March, but you never can tell what these bureaucrats are going to do next, to demand that the new Coonerty-led city council, it's actually the same city council, but it's got a new mayor, Ryan Coonerty, as of day before yesterday, that they require that there be shelter for homeless people during those spraying times. And we've talked about this on the air, how Councilmember Madrigal, though he was really heavy with giving out the gauze masks downtown, couldn't quite get himself to say, I will publicly call for shelter for the homeless during the spraying times. Those words just couldn't escape his lips. But we did get him to talk about it a little bit on tape, and he went around the subject numerous times. If you're interested in reviewing those tapes, you can go to the Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Huff, and it's www.huffsantacruz.org, and then you click on the name of the show, which is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and the date, which unfortunately I think the date for the Madrigal show was probably early November, but you have to check through a few shows. And my apologies to those of you who actually do go back and listen to archived shows. I know a few do. For not having the information up there. But we're soon to have a new website spiffy up and updated and maybe even video-plated. You never can tell. If everything works out well, things are going to be looking a lot better. It'll be a lot more efficient, and you'll be able to get information more quickly and reference stuff you've heard here. If you want to go back to a show you've heard before in order to check out some of the claims on the show, or review some of the interviews, you'll be able to do that. Back now to the Thanksgiving meal. We should be getting a call-in shortly from Peggy Lee Kennedy of Venice Beach. She works with Food Not Bombs down there and has some disturbing news to report about how the L.A. police banned from enforcing the municipal code, which says you can't sit, sleep, or lie on the sidewalk, is now using other laws to go after homeless people, such as the state anti-lodging law, which is used in Sacramento and was used in San Diego before an injunction there, and people are being arrested for it. That could be her right now, or it could be somebody else. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert. What's your name, caller?
Peggy Lee Kennedy.
Ah, you are the infamous Peggy Lee Kennedy. You
yes.
Got in. This is great. I was razzing you. I was telling the listeners before you called in that you were an activist down in Venice Beach, Santa Monica area. I guess I didn't mention you work for the newspaper Making Change nearby, right? That's the homeless paper.
I've contributed articles to Making Change, but technically I don't work with them.
And you also, you worked a bit with Carol Sobel, the attorney who kind of initiated, did a lot of the legwork for the Jones lawsuit, which now seems to be in trouble, even though there was a settlement and Los Angeles homeless people, not just in Skid Row, but throughout the city, supposedly are supposed to be safe until they build 1,250 units of sustainable or low-income housing, and that provided they're 10 feet away from businesses, they can sleep, sit, or lie between, what is it, 9 o'clock in the evening and 6 o'clock in the morning. But you have bad news for us, I'm told.
Well, you know, bad news comes with uniforms, evidently, and guns and batons and black and white cruisers for the homeless. So, first of all, I don't work with Carol Sobel. I submit documentation to her and the National Lawyers Guild in hopes that we can get legal help. So, just in case the city attorneys are listening to this, the Los Angeles city attorneys, because I did a deposition, and they accused us of working for Carol Sobel. So, just to be clear, I don't get paid. So, we submit documentation, and we got a call from somebody this week that, actually, I found out about it last week, but people were being let out of jail. People were being arrested for a California penal code, and all the people that were sleeping on this sidewalk knew to get up at a certain time, and that they wouldn't be arrested before then. But the police came by and arrested a whole group of people in Venice.
That was under 647J, the ancient penal code from the 19th century against lodging, right?
Yeah, but it's also, doesn't it, it says illegal lodging on the tickets, but when I read the penal code, I thought it had something to do, I actually have a copy of it somewhere. I thought Jay had something to do with disorderly conduct or something.
Yeah, I think that may be the subtitle of it. I'm actually going to go online and try to draw up the text of 647J as we speak.
And it says something about loitering also in there.
Yeah, it's one of these unconstitutional laws. I know that Berkeley made enforcement of 647J the lowest priority of the Berkeley Police Department back in 2000 after significant protests by the Berkeley homeless community. And I think I mentioned to you earlier the Sacramento Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee, and various homeless people there are suing the city of Sacramento to stop enforcement of it, and it's occasionally used around Santa Cruz, not much. Mostly they use the sleeping ban law and other municipal and city codes. I'm still looking for the exact wording of this code section.
Well, it's huge. The law is huge. I went to go print it out, but it was huge. I thought I was going to use all my paper and my ink. I couldn't believe how long it was. So, some crazy long law.
Yeah, I think it's, I actually, as I mentioned to you, I myself was arrested under this law back in 1990. We were quite a number of us, I think it was 30 or 40 of us, sat in on the Civic Center in front of the mayor, then Mayor Agnos's office in San Francisco, with food not bombs and many homeless people who were camped at the Civic Center Plaza, and they arrested us under 647J. It's a misdemeanor. And so that has the advantage of anybody arrested under this code has a right to a jury trial. So I suggest all those people who get arrested demand jury trials immediately. That's my suggestion.
Well, unfortunately, when they arrest the people, they don't release them. A lot of them have little minor warrants already for, you know, shopping cart, all the tickets that they ticket people to death with. And so then they have these warrants, and then they don't release the people. And when this is what we interviewed, two different interviews, I got two different stories. One person told me that they were going to give them time served and probation. And the public defender told them that. And then they got in front of the judge, and they found out that they had a stay away order and a fine. And it was already kind of too late for them. They had already pleaded, and there they were. And that was the only way they were getting out of jail. The, you know, public defender didn't really help them.
No.
And the person,
public pretenders, eh?
Yeah. that.
Well, you know, that's the downside. If you had a misdemeanor, you have to bail out often. Infractions, usually they have to, you know, they let you out without a, usually they don't even jail you. But
yeah, so it's really bizarre. The guy was so afraid when we interviewed him because the stay-away order that they give these people is exactly the location where the only services in Venice are. So they give these people stay-away orders exactly where the services are. And evidently this public defender was new or didn't care or whatever, or he was taking it on, I don't know what they call when they do extra, some of these lawyers do extra work and they step in and help. I don't know what that's called, but I guess they're insane. But what he didn't know that the services were there and that this person actually had a defense to that stay-away order. Because you can't give somebody a stay-away order and expect them to starve. That's where the Bread and Roses Cafe serves food 5 days a week. That's where the Venice Clinic is. And that is exactly where this person's storage unit was. So he was so afraid he had to let us into the storage unit. He was waiting. Oh, that was the day before Thanksgiving when we interviewed him. He was waiting for the bus to pick people up to take them to their St. Monica's meal so that he could get out of Venice. He was so afraid he was on the property of the storage unit. So I don't know what's going to happen, hopefully.
The intent is to terrorize homeless people into meekly obeying whatever order the cop or the merchant, or the person in authority has. I found the actual code section. I'll read it to you.
Yeah, not just that. With the stay-away orders, they were moving them from Venice.
This
period.
Was a stay-away order that was done after they were arrested under this code section,
right?
Okay, right. The code reads, every person who commits, this is 647J of the California Penal Code, every person...
J, how many, what is the alphabet? It's like J, how many letters? Are there?
Well, there are a number of other sections, A, B, C, D, right. But they're not relevant to that. J is a separate section, and it reads, every person who commits any of the following acts is guilty of disorderly conduct, a misdemeanor, and there are a whole bunch of different acts. But the J section, and that which specifically says, I can find it again, I had it a moment ago, any person who lodges in any building, structure, vehicle, or place, whether public or private, without the permission of the owner or person entitled to the possession or in control of it. That is the code section they're using to destroy the Jones precedent. Again.
Yeah, well, that's what the LAPD that are in the Pacific Division did. That's the Venice Police, the Pacific Division.
So what else is happening in Venice? I know there's been a controversy around the lottery down there and how people on the beach are treated and vehicles.
Yeah,
what's going on with all that stuff?
Well, let's go for the big item on that list is the overnight parking district permit program. Our liberal city council person, his name is Bill Rosendahl, he says he's very concerned about the homeless and he wants to help them. And you know, in general, he's been on the right side on issues concerning certain things. He votes correctly when it's a high-profile homeless situation. And when they...
For example.
The city attorney, Carol Sobel and the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild and the ACLU, Carol Sobel won the Jones case in the Ninth Circuit. The city attorney pressured to move into an appeal. And the vote came up for the appeal, and Bill Rosendahl voted against the appeal, which was good. But only two or three city council people voted against it, and it went forward, and I guess that was part of the dilemma. They felt like it wouldn't win in the appeal, whatever.
But
and
of
that's
course,
not
they
even
didn't.
My issue.
Yeah, that was
but
interesting. It was interesting. That appeal just stayed around for, 15, 16 months without getting to either to a higher court or even to an en banc panel. Do you have any enlightenment about why the Jones decision didn't you know, why the appeal didn't proceed in a timely manner. I mean, one of the reasons
I don't really know, all the issues because I'm not, you know, that it's more that was more of a Skid Row. And you probably should talk to somebody who's more involved with Skid Row politics.
Yeah, we've tried.
Always get that secondhand.
We have really tried repeatedly, and nobody ever calls us back.
Yeah,
you're
hard
one of the few.
Because
yeah.
I've just gotten comments from different people. So I do know that Carol Sobel went down to Skid Row over and over and over again working on this case. So I know there's a lot of controversy about it, but I don't really know enough.
Well, you know, the controversy up here was about the fact that we had local ACLU people like Don Zimmerman who wouldn't even step up to the plate and say, gosh, we have a precedent sitting there as of April 2006 that says you can't arrest homeless people who have no legal place to go because it's cruel and unusual punishment. Let's use it and get a similar ruling down here while we still have the precedent. But Zimmerman and the ACLU and, in fact, the entire Northern California ACLU sat on their hands for 18 months. And finally,
I've never really had many good experiences with the ACLU.
Right. And so what eventually what happened was that one of the excuses that Zimmerman used was, well, it's on appeal, so it could change at any time. And the strange thing was it was on appeal. And I know that, even while it was on appeal, the L.A. City Council, even though they voted to appeal it, and rejected a settlement about a year ago, did say, you know, the police chief and the city attorney decided they weren't going to arrest people because they didn't want to get any further, I don't know, contempt of court or damages charges based on the fact that they would be clearly violating the restraining order that had been issued by the Ninth Circuit.
And then, they said that, did they? Well, I doubt they meant it.
No, they did it. I mean, they stopped arresting people to some extent under that law, but then, of course, they moved in huge amounts of police and began parole checks, probation checks.
Yeah, it was insane.
Dropping a cigarette on the sidewalk, it became a crime, as has been done in Santa Cruz at different points as well, in fact, not so long ago. So that's why I bring it up. And I know also the controversy, and I know that you're not terribly comfortable with this, but...
I don't know enough, really.
Right, well, wait a minute. You're not comfortable with this is something else, which is the fact that, you know, this decision was made to agree to vacate the decision to have a settlement in the Jones settlement in Los Angeles, expanded it so that it did cover the entire city, not just the Skid Row area. However, it removed the precedent so that no other jurisdiction in the nine-state area covered by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals could use it. And
I
understand that this was done without any kind of consultation with L.A. Can, with a Catholic Worker, or with the homeless plaintiffs themselves who were the main plaintiffs, Jones and others. Now, what do you know about that? Anything?
I know nothing about that, to be honest with you. But I do know, but like I said, back to the city council person, he voted against the appeal.
Okay,
we're
getting back to Bill.
That was something good he did. The guy did something right.
So we're going back to Bill Rosendahl and his bad action around this vehicle habitation law.
I personally think that it has something to do with campaign favors because this is a law that came in right after. It was like he got on the transportation committee and then pushed through this somebody had constructed an ordinance before he got there, and he pushed it through. And it really basically about eliminating street parking, people living in their vehicles. It's citywide, of course, because it's a city law, but it's about creating districts where there's permit parking only for only people who qualify as so-called residents, then they can have a permit. They got to buy it, of course, and they got to go to the place to get it, and they got to renew it. And a lot of rules to it, which I think harm a lot of different people besides the homeless, but people don't talk about that. They just pushed it through, and they are. And then they submit their recommendation to the city council to get it permitted, and then the city council passes, you know, each time a district is approved, it has to be approved by the city council. Well, the city council has approved 5 districts in Venice. 4 of them cover almost the entire Venice Beach area, which is in the coastal zone. And that is where all the services are also. Exactly that same place they give stay-away orders. It's all about gentrification and getting rid of the homeless people out of the beach area by the new NIMBY or even the old NIMBY people. They're very ferocious, and they work very hard with the police and the city attorney and the city council.
Now, has this actually been put into...
Yes.
Has this been in the debates itself where the word homeless is used, or they try to use subterfuges?
No, it's quality of life, people parked illegally, nuisances, you know, but all I did a public records request, and I got a lot of damaging information, and that's really, it's all about the homeless. It really is.
Does the word homeless actually appear in these records that you've gotten?
Oh, sure. The RV people, the campers, and then really, really ferocious accusations made by the city council deputy himself using the very same language that these reactionary anti-homeless hate groups here use against the homeless people. Exactly the same language, people dumping their sewage, you know, defecating, urinating, and throwing the whole, you know, parking in front of our house, the whole thing that they always complain. You know, there's maybe one person in 200 that does that or once in a while, but they go on and on. Like every single person living in an RV is a criminal, you know, or an alcoholic.
And so they don't provide any stats that actually show how many tickets for urinating, how many tickets for defecating. And
yeah, I don't think they actually give any tickets for that.
Do they have any specific reports of how many times this has happened?
In my request, I asked originally the law was supposed to go through with petitions. And then I guess they softened it up, or they made it easier. They could get a letter of recommendation from the neighborhood council, which is a pretty right wing, you know, business.
You mean the permit districts?
The
could
application
be set
for the district
could be put up.
There's
could be set
two
up,
sides you know. To it. You either one side comes from the neighborhood council. Either it's a petition of a greater percentage of the so-called residents, or a letter of recommendation from the neighborhood council. That's one side of it. The other side has to be a letter from the captain of the Pacific Division or the neighborhood prosecutor for Venice. They're saying that there is a documented nuisance. Now, I got some petitions. I did not get all the petitions, and I got no letters from any of those people in this public records request. What I did get was a lot of work of a lot of people putting a lot of time in to lobby to get these in without showing any wide public support for this. Very limited petitions were turned in. I like my favorite one, which is posted on our website. You can view it at www.justice.wetnostril, like, you know, a dog's wet nose, wetnostril.net, and it's my favorite one is for a whole block. It's owned by a developer. There's just the developer's name and address on that petition, no signature. And that's my favorite petition. And then, that's the petitions I found, really terrible petitions. And emails back and forth lobbying Arnold Schwarzenegger's office to help them. Assembly member Ted Lieu to come to their meetings at the Coastal Commission, because that's their obstacle with these 4 of the 5 parking districts for the permits. And I just want to tell you, it doesn't give people extra parking during the day because they're next to the beach. It's only between 2 and 6 in the morning.
Yeah, we have a similar law in Santa Cruz introduced by the liberal Mayor, ex-Mayor Riley, who's still on the city council, began in our local industrial park, Harvey West. Essentially, it was no parking signs between, I think it was 4 and 6 in the morning. Again, with obviously the intention of driving away homeless people who are in their vehicles, even though we already have a law that criminalizes people who sleep in their vehicles from 11 o'clock at night to 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, they need more criminalizing laws.
I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, do you have a law against habitating a vehicle in Venice?
Yes.
Do you already have?
Yeah.
What is that
LA,
law? What is that law? What does that law say? What's the nature of that law?
I'd have to look it up. And I can look it up. I'm sure I have it on my computer.
I mean, are police enforcing? We call that the sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz. What kind of a how severely is it enforced in Venice Beach?
It goes up and down. I think they go after the people they think won't be able to fight it, or you know, that have warrants that'll do like the other people do, get arrested and then take the stay away order and the probation just to get out of jail, and then they've basically driven them out of Venice. So
what kind of opposition is forming to these laws? Sounds like you're doing a lot of work, but are there other organizations forming to fight back?
Yeah, there's a problem with that. Our organizations in Venice are social service funded through the city and state, and you know, a lot of them actually started out as radical, you know, more radical, like the Venice Clinic started out with a bunch of lefty doctors volunteering their time. Now one of the directors is on, you know, the community police board. And, like, the St. Joseph Center is a major provider of social services in Venice. They're the ones who run Bread and Roses, that food program that's 5 days a week. And hello?
Still here.
Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, sorry. In 2002, when I started going to all the different meetings to check them out, I went to a community policing subcommittee called Homeless Outreach. And, you know, they had people representing St. Joseph's there, sitting there, you know, not really speaking out or saying anything bad. And, you know, I just really get bad feelings when that happens, when the police are sitting there with the people who hate the homeless and they're making mean comments and horrible jokes. And then the people who are supposed to be helping the homeless aren't saying anything.
Yeah, we've had the same thing here in Santa Cruz, where the so-called downtown neighbors and then the Santa Cruz neighbors hold forums where they bring in the police officer, Sergeant Seeley, for instance.
Yeah.
I guess, or is it Officer Seeley? I think it is.
Hang
on a second. Let me do this for. The reason I'm interrupting you is because I like to give it a local focus, so that people who are listening can understand. We're not just talking about Venice Beach. We're talking about Santa Cruz. Here in Santa Cruz, we have the homeless resource officer who essentially goes around arresting people rather than providing homeless resources,
right.
You know, and challenging people. And we have, you know, we have the Homeless Service Center Director, Ken Cole, who, while he occasionally puts in a good word at city council every so often, you know, gives these little presentations at these meetings. And it sounds like a similar kind of right-wing vigilante kind of police agenda sort of thing going on in Venice Beach. Am I wrong about that, or...?
It's very right-wing vigilante. People have gotten their vehicles burned and tires stabbed. It's crazy.
And what happens when homeless people call the police and report these incidents?
Oh, please. Then they can't say that they're homeless because it's against the law.
Now, what exact law do they have that makes it illegal to be homeless?
Okay, it's just overnight parking permitted. Prohibited or limited. It's 8054, LAMC 80.54. And
overnight parking is prohibited, but not sleeping, right?
Well, it does say things about dwelling. So, or is this, no, I'm sorry, this is the...
sounds like the permit parking law.
It's the permit parking one, I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, in Santa Monica, where I think you probably spent time, there was... and actually somewhat enlightened law that allowed homeless people to sleep in certain parts of town, and if they were challenged, they had to move within a certain period of time to another part of town. That was under The you may remember.
No, they have
hang
camp,
on a second. Hang
camping.
On a second. Wait a minute, Peggy. That was under the Liberal City Attorney Bob Myers.
Yeah.
And is he? First of all, has that changed? You know, and second of all, has he been helpful to you at all?
Bob Myers has always been a helpful person. You know, it just. I think that. There isn't really any organized resistance in Santa Monica like there used to be. And there's not really a big organized resistance in Venice either, so.
Now you continue to work with Food Not Bombs, right?
Yeah.
And Food Not Bombs continues to resist the demand of the police and other neighborhood groups that you move everything inside in terms of food serving, right? You're still serving in the city parks, right? I think we lost you. Wow. Well, Peggy may have run out of minutes on her cell phone. She was really sweet to give us a call. That was Peggy Lee Kennedy from Venice, which is a suburb of Los Angeles, and she was reporting on the use of new laws to criminalize sleeping at night by the homeless, the 647J Penal Code section, which Bob Lee, our district attorney, has used occasionally here in Santa Cruz against a camper or two that I've heard about, maybe even a camper or 20. If I did a Public Records Act request like Peggy did, we might find that out. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio. It's 101.1 FM on your dial or freakradio.org on the Internet. The call-in number here is 427-3772, and I'll take your calls. My name is Robert Norris. We're going for another hour. Let's get back to some of the interviews from Thanksgiving, and then we'll be turning to another issue, the issue of seizure of vehicles, which is something that some of us have been fighting and coming up with some interesting results.
The people in Santa Cruz don't like us folks that live in sleeping bags. And you know that's a fact for many years.
Any hassles from the cops specifically recently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they got a lot of rookies. They've been treating the rookies on the sweat of my ass.
And imagine, if you will, an oral protective dam for having, you know, oral sex. Well, they want to have a homeless dam somewhere and not feel us. So.
They don't give a damn as well. Well, actually, they...
What I would really like to finish off with is that God is still alive, and he's pissed off.
Well said. Thank you, Bear. Any comments from you guys on the homeless scene, hassles with the police, new and exciting adventures, sleeping tickets?
Okay, 3 months ago I had a three-bedroom house with a built-in swimming pool, lost my house, and I come down here and they're, like, treating me like crap.
What's your name?
Nikki.
And Nikki, how long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
Since June 1st.
And what have you been doing in order to sleep at night? What's been your
opinion? Out, sleeping behind walls, anywhere I could sleep.
Have you gotten any sleeping tickets?
About six of them.
Okay, would you like to challenge them in court?
I'd love to.
Why don't you write?
To paralegal school.
Oh, good. Then perhaps you can help us.
Sales and marketing resume. I mean, I am just like not the typical homeless person, and they're treating me like I am, and I hate it. So I'd love to help you.
And as a woman, are you usually alone out here? I mean, or...
I normally am. My boyfriend and I just got together like a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I was out here alone, and yes, I got treated like bad out here. Bad.
Let me get your name, and you got a phone or contact number?
Yes, I do.
Why don't you put it down here, plus approximate dates of your sleeping tickets, and we'll get back to you, and also...
Probably seven tickets since I've been living down here. And I've never been homeless in my life. I'm an inside sales manager. I had five employees, my own office, everything. I came down here, lost my house.
And here you are.
And they're treating me really bad.
The last ticket you got was about when?
Oh, probably 3 days ago.
And we're going to be talking more with, or you'll be hearing some more of this tape, but on the phone with us again is...
Peggy Lee Kennedy.
Hey,
from
Peggy.
Venice.
All right, thank you for calling back. You say you found the nasty law that was used even before this permit parking nonsense came into play, huh?
Yeah, 8502, LAMC 8502. It's use of streets and public parking lots for habitation. So it says no person shall use a vehicle parked or standing upon any city street or upon any parking lot owned by the City of Los Angeles and under the control of the City of Los Angeles or under control of the City Los Angeles County Department of Beaches and Harbors as living quarters either overnight, day by day, or otherwise. So that's a law from 1983 that they prosecuted people for, and we've successfully defended people, so I think they pick and choose. But, you know, back to Monica, you know, because Venice is part of L.A. City, I have to look at two sets of laws. Santa Monica, I know you were talking about it was more progressive, more liberal in Santa Monica, but it just continually gets worse and worse there as far as their laws. They have camping laws. They have sleeping on benches laws. They have, I understand somebody got a ticket for handing out food, and they used a sampling law, which was actually put in effect March of 2007. I looked it up. I mean, it's just, they're out of control. Both cities are out of control on criminalization. So that has to be my next project with the website, is to sit there and list all
of these. I know you've also, Peggy, been successful in a couple of lawsuits to regain damages from city authorities that have criminalized the homeless in some cases, right?
Yeah, we submitted documentation to Carol Sobel for a sweep in Venice. And the lead plaintiff's name was Noe, N-O-E. And there's a story about that linked on our website, too. And what happened?
You there? Hello? I think we lost you again, kiddo.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
You mentioned the Noe case, N-O-E?
The Noe case, yes. What happened? Let me plug back in. The police came through with the garbage trucks and the county workers, and in the middle of the night, they made everybody leave the beach, and they took all their stuff and threw it in dumpsters. I guess there was about 10 dumpsters worth of people's belongings. They told all the people, come back, just leave now, like it was some kind of a national crisis. Go, 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 and out, everybody go, 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 flashlights, and your stuff will be there when you get back. And, of course, it wasn't. They threw it away, and it was a fluke that, you know, my partner Calvin and I found it by driving by it because we were trying to see if there was a certain form to fill out at the airport courthouse's clerk's office, and it was claim for damages against the city is what we were looking for. But they only have that downtown place. So we were unsuccessful at getting the form, but on the way back from the LAX, which is the airport, it's three or four towns away, on the way back, we were driving by, and Calvin, my partner, says, hey, is that their shit? And we had no gas, so I was very upset that I had to turn around like it was their shit, and it was. So it was really funny because I was really worried about my gas, but it was all these people's belongings piled in these dumpsters, and we just found them just driving by. That was three towns away, next to the city council person's office.
Did you retrieve it, or did you just document that it was there?
There were people that had already gone through it. It had been a couple hours. I think we found it around 1:30, and the sweep happened at around 3 in the morning, so 2 or 3 in the morning, so it had been picked through, but and also most of it was damaged. So we took a few, Calvin videotaped it, and then we ran back to the beach to tell people where their stuff was, and we picked up some people in our van and drove them back, and people were able to retrieve it, just a few things. But most of it was gone or damaged, but because we had all that documentation of their property, and we took statements, and there was a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit that was filed against the city on behalf of all those people. It was Noe versus the city, N-O-E.
Punitive damages as well, or just compensatory damages?
All the people got damages. I don't know what. Exactly. I have to read the lawsuit.
I mean, was there a large fine for the police department as well as the cost of what was destroyed, or was it just the cost of what was destroyed?
I think that the major victory was that they had to keep from throwing people. They actually had to agree to hold their belongings for a certain amount of time, and they can't throw it away. Of course, they dishonor that by saying it's garbage and it's abandoned. But if you can catch them, there's now an agreement that they can't do that.
Yeah, they actually were successful in that in Fresno in the so-called Kincaid decision. We've talked with activist Mike Rhodes about that. Here in Santa Cruz, Ranger John Wallace sends out his teams to destroy homeless property, even, and which is in violation of state law, I believe. If it's under, if it's over $400, it can't be regarded as trash. And you know, I mean, I think there are arguments for even if it's even worth specifically less. If it's, you know, if it's not, if it's lost property, it's not necessarily abandoned. If it's a campsite, it's obviously not abandoned unless there's evidence of that.
Right, and you know, I think that part of the bigger picture here is that when they take people's belongings and they throw them away and they, and you can't, and you lose things, you lose so much of yourself when that happens, because, you know, your things that you never can replace quite often get taken, like, you know, or some piece of paper that you needed. And, you know, I mean, people's lives are trashed by that. And, I mean, it just, it's clearly the people are treated like garbage when they treat their belongings like garbage. And it's so inhumane. I don't know another good word for it.
Oh, it's an outrageous violation of human dignity, and it treats people like beasts, is what it
does. Yeah, it's like evil.
Worse than beasts.
It's an evil thing, and that the people who are in the house are not human, and they don't deserve to be treated as human. And that's
Peggy, you're beginning to fade out, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to thank you for taking the time. I'm going to remind people that if they want to check out the website where some of this stuff is mentioned, they can go to
www.justice.wetnostril.net.
www.justice.wetnostril.net.
Yeah, like a wet nose of a dog.
Okay.
And then you can link onto our Food Not Bomb site, and you can see me getting arrested when I got arrested with Food Not Bombs. It's a nice picture of me getting arrested.
Right on. Stand up. Speak out. Fight back.
All right, man. I'm so sorry I didn't call you that all those times I promised to call in on
your
show.
No, you did this time. You did this time. And that's great.
I apologize.
Well, Peggy, you've been doing a lot of stuff down there. We can't expect you to be calling some 2-bit radio station up the coast.
Oh, that's so wrong for you to say that. I totally dig your radio station. I was listening to it online, and the recording of all the people, and I really inspired. We want to do our own radio show just like that.
Do it. Do it. And keep me abreast of events. You're welcome to call in with any reports you want regularly or irregularly. And if you want to call, if anybody who has been listening to this wants and has some questions for you, we can't really do it. We're not set up for it, because you have to call a different line. But if you want to call,
you can find our they'll find our email on the website. So
yeah, we can do that. Thank you very much, Peggy, and keep us advised.
All right, peace, man.
All right, bye bye. And phone lines are open 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio, and I'm Robert Norris. And I don't know who you are if you're listening, but I hope you are. Let's see what's cooking. There's a Being John Brown, Anti-Racist Discussion Group is happening this Sunday, December 2nd, 3 p.m. at the UCSC Transit Autonomous Zone. That's the free school. That sounds like a call. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio. What's your name?
Hi, Robert. It's Madison.
Hey,
happy
Madison.
Holiday.
Welcome, Madison. What's cooking?
I think that John Brown thing sounds a little like a federal name-taking gig.
Well, you're always a little paranoid about that stuff, I think.
No, I'm not paranoid. I went into things where people never got emails several times in Santa Cruz.
Well, you always got to be aware that the cops can be there. But, you know, you work it anyway.
They're
that's what we do.
All over this town.
You know, I mean, it's just an unfortunate reality, and there you have it. But what have you got? What's your reaction? What's your news?
Something you would like I saw on channel, I think it was on the internet cell phone, but it's under abc7news.com. And they had gone around to all the police departments in the Bay Area to see who could get Public Records Act stuff. and they gave grades to everybody.
Oh, really? Like, yeah, I'd like to see that. Yeah, why don't you
email it
to me?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. El Cerrito got an A. Sunnyvale got a D. San Francisco got a D. Half Moon Bay got an A. And Santa Cruz wasn't on the list, so I thought, you know what, this is something you should call them and say, hey, come down with me.
Maybe get a Z for Santa Cruz, you know. The cruise
ends
with a Z.
No, I think Santa Cruz, according to what I read there, would probably have gotten an F.
Yeah, I didn't do, Santa Cruz is not, I mean, the police department, under pressure from some of us, has altered its procedures a little bit. In fact, that's the next thing I'm really about to play, which is a attempt to get public records, actually a successful attempt to get public records from the police department.
Well, you know who would be a great person, as I read that? Call the police chief of El Cerrito and interview him. Why did you get an A and why did everyone else get an F?
Right. Well, send me the information. We'll talk more about it. Maybe I'll look into it. And if you want to do the interview, I'll play it.
Yeah, it's ABC7News.com. It was on my cell phone, but you can get it online, too. If you
all
don't
right.
go on there and get their stuff in like a day or so.
Anything else happening up there?
And I don't have the internet here to send it to you. Other than that, no, just a couple moles that I threw out of my house. That was about it.
Okay, well, keep those moles at arm's length.
Oh, you'd be surprised who it was because they've been dogging this town for a very long time. You would be shocked, in fact.
Oh, you mean human moles?
Yep. Oh,
all right,
yeah.
Well, I will leave.
More on the left hasn't changed. They just go. The whole entire time they were just setting up pegs.
I'll have to document this by checking with my authorities in Washington.
Yeah, I know. Well, pull your files. Yeah, everybody start. If you live in Santa Cruz, you have a file.
You take care, kiddo. I'm going to leave.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. I admit, I run in terror when the paranoia seems to get deeper, but you never can tell. You're tuned to Free Radio, and the call-in number here is 427-3772. A few more interviews, and then I will play for you some, incident in the police station. And actually, a subsequent incident at the parking windows where you pay your parking tickets.
I get one every 3 days.
And what happened then, and with respect to that? And how did that go down?
Camping.
Who was it? A lot of police officers? One? A ranger?
Three cops.
And where were you camping? Sleeping?
Outside of HPHP.
And
on the wall. Outside of it.
And did they give you a legal place to go?
Nope. They just said, get out of here, we're going to take you to jail. That's all they said.
And did they give you a ticket even though you left?
Yes.
Okay, well, write down your name, your contact number. We will call you. And also, here's this thing. You seem to take care of yourself. Right? Get back in touch on the 1st of December.
Hang on, babe.
All right.
You know, and I have five kids. I'm an inside sales manager. I've had an $80,000 job. I mean, I just became homeless. First time in my life.
And are your kids still with you? Or?
No, they're in L.A.
Okay, well.
Because they can't live here with me.
I got you.
Because what I'm going through.
I hear you. Okay, we're talking with Sash. How are you doing, Sash?
I'm all right.
And you say that your child is not with you.
Yeah, they took her because they said I neglected her by being homeless. And I was given a house by my 7th month of pregnancy. And they're now giving her back to an abusive father who can't cook or clean a house. And I just happen to know how to clean and cook even though I was homeless. And they're slandering me saying that I am not... A competent mother, basically, yeah.
And how long ago did this happen, Sage?
She was born in February, and she's now 10 months old, and she doesn't even know who I am because of the foster care, and they're not going to give her back.
And did they give any other reason than the fact that you were homeless, like drug use, abusive activity, anything like that?
They said I neglected her by medicating with Prop 215, but the medicine that they tried to give me for it, instead, I wound up having side effects after the pregnancy, and it could have hurt my child. I could have miscarried if I had taken the other medication, and now they're saying that I neglected her by being homeless and by medicating with a different medication other than a chemical prescription, and now they're basically giving her back to an abusive father who's hit me and doesn't know how to keep a house or cook proper meals, and they're still trying to slander my name as far as me just being a stupid kid having a kid, but I was actually knowledgeable about it.
How old are you?
20.
Although you look younger.
Yeah.
So, are you outside?
No, I have a house, but they're still trying to call me psychologically disabled and say that I'm not adequate enough to take care of her, but they're still giving her back to an abusive father.
And in your opinion, do you have any psychological disabilities? I mean, are there anything? Do you have any problems that you think you actually have?
Well, other than being molested by my stepfamily and assaulted on my own, I mean, I still have some really bad mental problems because of it, but that doesn't hinder me as far as being a capable mother. If anything, it helps me not make the same mistakes. And it's kind of messed up that they can turn around and take my PTSD and use it against me and say that makes me not a competent mother. I think there's plenty of women with PTSD issues who raise their kids and are fine. And I think it's pretty much a slander to say that I was homeless and I neglected my child when I had no other way. And now, obviously, I won't neglect her. There is no way I would neglect her. And I can be a capable mother. And instead, they're giving her back to a non-capable father.
Thank you. Anything else you want to add?
Power to the poor. Stick up for yourself. Keep your chin up. And stay warm.
You're here.
Thank you. We're talking with
Hobbit.
And Hobbit, you say that in Santa Monica you had some special attention from a police officer?
Yeah, I was sitting down, you know, just smoking a cigarette, and all of a sudden I got hassled by the cops for sitting on my backpack, and they gave me a ticket for it.
Smoking or for sitting?
Just for sitting on my backpack.
What did the cop warn you, or where was this?
No, he came up and did the whole searching thing just for sitting on my backpack. I thought it was disrespectful myself.
How long ago?
Probably about maybe 2 months ago.
And how long you been in Santa Cruz?
I've been up here for about maybe off and on about 4 years, but I went down to Santa Monica just to, you know, hang out with a couple of friends, and that's what happened. It's pretty crazy.
Are you outside or are you inside?
Currently outside.
And have you been ticketed for being outside here?
Yeah, I have. They said I was aggressive panhandling, but to them, I guess that's a crime, too.
And what were you doing? Were you grabbing people and shaking them by the lapels, or what?
No, just asking. Yeah. You know, asking politely.
Where did you get the ticket?
On Front Street.
On the street we're standing on now?
Yeah. Actually, on the street back here.
Pacific Avenue?
Pacific Ave, yeah.
What were the circumstances?
I guess they thought I was some other guy, so they just went ahead and did a search just for wearing a tie-dye, I guess, you know what I mean?
You have a Grateful Dead t-shirt on.
Yeah.
Did you have that on at the time?
Or? Yeah. It never comes off.
And was this during the day, after dark?
It was during the day. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear. What's that ticket is still hanging on? Or?
Yeah, it's still there.
If you get a ticket, you can... you should probably... If you might want to come to a Huff meeting if you want to challenge it in court, or you might want to do community service on it if you want to plead guilty. There's all kinds of things to do, and I'll talk about them more.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're talking with su nombre?
Miguel.
We're talking with Miguel. Miguel, you had a problem at night in the when you were parking with your car, yes?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Tell us what happened.
Yeah, and the police coming 4 o'clock in the morning, and he want to take my car because he thinks that I know in there, maybe other people, they know speak English or something, but he want to take my car. He tell me, I give you 10 minutes, go out, and I take your car. I tell him, why? Because I'm not doing nothing bad. I try to sleep only.
Now, were you parked in an area that said no parking or no?
No, nothing. It's a lot
of in Harvey West? Or?
Maybe thanks car, the company parking in the street. I stay between days, the cars, the company cars. He want to take my car because he know. He know my name. He know I am Spanish because when I tell him, hey, why you wanna take my car? He tell me, hey, you Miguel? I answer him, you know, yes, I am Miguel. I am the owner of the car. After that, he go back. He thinks different because he tell me, why you move the warning I put in my car? And I answer, you know, because I move my car. You want I move my car? I move my car. He bad because I know he wanna take my car, but after he's no the owner, I am in there. He go very, 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 very.
Did he still tell you to move your car or not?
No,
stop.
No, he knew you were the owner.
When he know the owner is in there, he left very, very mad, you know, because he want to take my car. But I don't know why, because I'm not doing nothing wrong. Are you still living in your car or not? Now, no. Because you're outdoors or indoors?
In the calle or in the casa?
Oh, outside.
But you're doing not in Santa Cruz or?
Yeah, Santa Cruz.
And no problems con la policía?
No, right now not, because I stay very far. I don't stay around here in the downtown, you know. I am okay now.
Thank you, Miguel.
Okay. Thank you, Barry.
A new mayoral candidate, hot from the pen. Your name, sir?
No, I'm not hot from the pen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've been out here for years, man.
What's your name?
My name is Brian.
And Brian, you're a man of darker hue of skin. Any racial profiling in Santa Cruz?
It depends on who it is.
I'm worried about our police department.
I mean, sometimes, you know what I mean? It's not, it used to be worse. I've seen a little bit of difference, but you still have it. But as long as you got people who got freedom of choice, they're going to choose to do what they apply. You know, some people apply negative, some people apply positive. You know, we can't control it all, but if we start more conducively as a whole towards positivity, then we won't...
The cops hassle you.
Yeah, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
But not because of the way you like your skin color.
To say off the bat, just to them doing it as that, I couldn't say that. But once you interact with them, you pretty much know where they're coming from. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's good. You know,
you
saying,
have no complaints at the moment, or do you?
I got all kinds of complaints, man.
Give me a complaint.
No, a complaint because, you know, you have to learn to be humane. You have to learn what it means to be moral. You have to learn what it means to have your focus upon a disposition that keeps you wholesome so that you don't lose that position in your mind or that focal point and make you stupid.
Thank you. And the child criminals are coming out in force. Becky Johnson, or at least someone who looks like her, has been drawing a hopscotching matrix. And there are two young women, Amy and Bailey, who are writing upon the sidewalk with chalk, which I haven't advised them is illegal. We are engaging in criminal behavior here in Santa Cruz. But there are no police in sight, and it looks like an unlikely basis for any kind of arrest. Who knows? Maybe more people will join them chalking more. Talking with the one who's been working for the meal here. What's your name?
Debbie Wilson.
And Debbie, you just signed up expressing your opposition to the sleeping ban.
That's correct.
And why is that? Don't you think the city should have a right to get rid of these ne'er-do-wells who litter the street? And they're bringing down the property values, don't you think?
No, I do not. I think that these people deserve to be warm at nighttime and that it's a necessity that they stay warm. Otherwise, they'd be occupying the hospitals with an overflow of pneumonia.
And it looks like you have a religious angle because I see a cross around your neck here.
Well, yes, I am a Christian, Catholic to be exact, but that doesn't really matter. I think anybody of any humanity would rather have somebody be in a blanket nice and warm than freezing and in a hospital.
Yes, but shouldn't they move to a warmer climate? I mean, Santa Cruz is, you know, it's becoming an increasingly expensive area to live in. We don't want these homeless people cluttering up the Poganip, do we?
Well, I don't see them cluttering up the Poganip if they're here downtown with their blankets, and I don't see any crime in people wearing a blanket or a sleeping bag.
But the Vice Mayor Coonerty, who's actually going to be mayor probably on Tuesday, has assured us that the sleeping ban is completely legal and an appropriate way for dealing with the camping situation in Santa Cruz because it's just not a good thing to have people camping in the city.
Well, they do have campgrounds outside the city limits, and that puts a person way far out there without any transportation or medical or phone. And so if these people become sick or hungry, how are they going to eat and stay warm?
I have nothing to say except the mayor apparently hasn't taken those things into account or thinks he has, but maybe he's just a no account.
Maybe he should try it for 30 days.
He runs the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and we, of course, have been doing a tabling every Sunday at 2 o'clock in front of the bookshop, urging people to boycott that store because he supports anti-homeless laws. What do you think of that idea?
Personally, I have seen people camping out in front of the Santa Cruz Bookshop, and I thought that they were very, the employees are very nice there, and they do allow homeless people or people that are supposedly wearing blankets to use their facilities and read books. And I thought that that store was established a long time ago for people that wanted to read and learn and better educate themselves. And that's the only way that we're going to get these people up off the streets is if they stay healthy and warm and can move on.
Well, that's certainly true that the Bookshop Santa Cruz itself does let a few homeless people sleep in the eaves of its doorway. But the people who run the bookstore, the mayor of Santa Cruz-to-be, Ryan Coonerty, and his father, Neil Coonerty, the supervisor, have given us the anti-homeless laws that make it illegal to sleep everywhere else in Santa Cruz. And, in fact, it's also illegal in front of their bookstore, although they don't arrest people for it. But that's, in fact, the laws they support. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that supporting that ban or supporting those laws were reintroduced and that they're making a big issue out of it and that it can get very extravagant and carried out of proportion. You know, these people have been doing this for years, and until the habitat at the homeless shelter is completed, there's nowhere for these people to sleep. And if you seclude them out in the Poganip area, you're bound to run into the pollution that they have. And with the rangers making these people leave all of their gear behind with their food and their clothing, it's not good.
Well, Debbie, I appreciate your update, and I expect you that you'll be sleeping in solidarity with us in the days to come and perhaps getting $97 tickets, as other people do.
I have been stopped a few times. I hope that doesn't happen.
Thank you, Debbie.
God bless.
And again, to clarify, Ranger Wallace's stormtrooper, so to speak, or let's say rather the cleanup crew, that's a nice way of putting it. They don't force you to leave without your gear, but if they find your campsite, they can apparently tear it down in a somewhat rough manner, or have. At least we've heard two reports of that today. And then come back in anywhere from 12 hours to 72 hours to a week, and then destroy everything as trash, even if it's not trash, even if it's your survival gear, even if you have no legal place to go. And that much seems to be not just true, but perpetual and regular policy. Hey, with a worker here, JP. Hey, JP.
Hi, how you doing?
You got a ticket about a month and a half ago.
Yes.
And I'm hopeful. I've just told you how to get it quashed, presumably by going to the Homeless Service Center, getting a letter that's saying there's no shelter at that time. Thank you, Bernard. But you're saying your work schedule interferes with using shelter, let's say, tonight even, right?
Yes, I would have to report to the shelter by a certain time. I believe it's 4 p.m. I don't even get off of work until 8 p.m., so it's impossible for me to get to that shelter in
time.
What
kind of work do you do?
I'm just dishwashing right now, but I have to...
Well, give up your dishwashing job and go to the armory. That way you'll be legal.
And then I'll have no income, and I'll be even more on the street.
Detail
change with the rest of the town.
Yes, yeah.
I'd like to keep my job.
And that's one of the reasons you're interested in this December 1st sleeping ban lawsuit meeting?
Absolutely. It's only going to hurt me to be in the legal system and have to pay even more money out of the meager wage I already make.
True enough. Again, we've been talking with
J.P. Freeman.
Thank you, J.P. And again, this event is happening on the 1st. That's Saturday, 4 o'clock, Loudoun Nelson Center. There's the movie Dark Days, followed by interviews with attorney David Beauvais, who will take your information and see if you can be a part of the lawsuit against the sleeping ban to make this area, bring it into the 21st century, so that homeless people get to be treated like human beings at night instead of unwanted pieces of trash that can be tossed out and tossed about. Say that again.
I know a lot of the people who are living in the street right now, and some of them have an inch-thick stack of camping tickets and no way to pay them. They're afraid they can't get a job because they have outstanding warrants for camping. So they're afraid to even go look for work because they're tired of being denied employment because they have outstanding warrants. And they're not criminals, they're not drug addicts, they're people who are down in their luck. They're sleeping, just trying to get by.
If you're interested, come to the Huff meeting or the Human Rights Organization meeting. Huff meeting is mentioned on this card. Human Rights Organization meeting is mentioned. JP, you say that in terms of the volunteers tonight, this afternoon, there's a considerable number.
Yes, there seems to be almost as many volunteers as there are people that are hungry to eat today. We've had to turn away volunteers.
Now, is the food going to hold out?
Yes, I believe so. I was just down in the kitchen. Looks like there's plenty for anyone who's hungry. And extras to go with them. These people need some food.
Gobble, gobble is all I can say.
Gobble, gobble. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, JP. And it's nearing 3 o'clock. A little music from Crow, who has a permit written on the sidewalk, permit, because I said so.
Now we got a really good reason to play.
Well, you know, I usually get permits sometimes when I play amplified music just so I don't get harassed. But I didn't have the money, so I said, fuck it.
Communist.
Socialist.
Terrorist.
Oh, I'm going to blow you up in a minute.
He needs a button.
Well, we have two mics here, not to mention Meriwether Mike, who is threatening to amplify his music.
He's
ready in the world.
This guy, he's that good of a snark. I'm going to blow the windows out of the mic.
And sooner or later, we're going to have some music here, folks, but I don't think I'm going to wait around for it. And now let's turn to, as promised before, a visit to the Santa Cruz Police Department. And visiting the Santa Cruz Police Department were myself, activist John or Yond Golder, and human rights organization worker Bernard Klitzner. And we were there actually to kind of, both of them were there to, well, we were all there to help each other. I had previously had a problem with the police department because when I came in to pick up a Public Records Act request for actually a copy of all the sleeping ban, the record of sleeping ban tickets for the last 6 months, the officer who gave it, where it was given, the person it was given to, and so forth, the Tricia Hewson refused to give it to me because I was tape recording the interaction I had at the counter. And you might say, well, you know, here's a public employee, a little nervous about being tape recorded. Why do you insist on tape recording? And the answer is that, first of all, in the police station, they're tape recording you. They have a video camera that's on you. So they have the right to do that. And you do, too. You're in a public place. They have no expectation of privacy. And I've talked on this radio station of how the same person, Tricia Hewsom, the records manager, stalled the Public Records Act request I made to find out just what exactly was the situation with the Homies for the Homeless protest at City Hall, where they kept a clean and peaceful campsite for 6 days and six nights, and then were driven away by the police and then smeared by the Sentinel and by the police as well, who claimed a number of things that in the Sentinel about there being drug use and misuse of the bathrooms and abusive behavior, harassment of the staff. I wanted to find out when the police were called, who made the complaints, what was the nature of the complaints, since the only tickets issued for Homies at the Homies for the Homeless protest were sleeping tickets. You would have thought that if there were other crimes being committed, that tickets or arrests would have been made for those particular crimes. And Tricia Hewsom really blocked my request for a period of time. She demanded an advance deposit. Then she wouldn't, and I clarified, well, I want to know how many pages it's going to be. She wouldn't tell me that. She said she didn't know. I said, I don't want to buy this. I just want to look at it. I have the right to look at public records. No, we won't do that. We have to sell it to you. A whole series of barriers were set up. And in all fairness to her, because of the complaints I made and the long amount of time I went through with her in September and October dealing with that blockade and sending in complaints to her superiors and putting the whole thing on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, the blog where I recommend you check out for interesting homeless stories. Again, that's Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Hewsom, this time, didn't require me to make an advance deposit, told me the amount of money, said, come on down, it'll be waiting at the counter.
Well, when I went down the day before this tape was made, it wasn't waiting at the counter. Instead, there was an employee there who I, as I turned on the tape recorder, say, where's the activity? Sir, you'll have to turn off the tape recorder. I'd, no, I won't have to turn off the tape recorder. You'll have to give me what I'm entitled to under the Public Records Act request. Can I please have that? Then she went back and refused to say another word. She got Tricia Hewson, who came in with the document I wanted, looked at me and said, turn off the tape recorder. And I said, no, give me the document. She refused, went back into the meeting. And I then sent her an email that night, the day previous to this recording we're about to hear, saying, if I have to come down there again and do this, I'm going to bill you for every amount of time I spend because you are blocking a Public Records Act request. You have no expectation of privacy from a tape recording. In fact, it shows you seem to have something to hide, you know. And that's just how it is. So, I mean, what's how it is these the employees are required to, if they're doing business with the public, they may be tape recorded, they might be videotaped. As long as you're not using it to make money off of them in some commercial way to sell things, it's, as far as I know, perfectly legal. And they are lying to you and, in fact, trying to intimidate you, and they post signs, as they have in all the city departments, that say, you can't tape record here. I ignore such signs because I'm a reporter. I have to tape record to document what's going on. But more important, I'm a citizen. I'm a resident. I'm a member of the community. I'm a person using a public service. And I know that on occasion the police account of an incident differs quite broadly from the victim's account, or let us say the so-called suspect or perpetrator. And therefore it's important that I have a document that shows from my perspective, somewhat objectively because it's a tape recording, what actually was said, and don't have to rely upon the claims of a police officer. So it's very important. Police officers tape record what goes on quite regularly. And so I do the same. And we'll continue to do so and encourage you out there in the community to do the same. It's really quite an effective weapon. And it shows you that they are really either badly misinformed or else concealing something when they run around and say they don't want to be recorded and block service. This has happened to me extensively. It happened this summer, and I played you the tapes, those of you who remember, listened to the station, when I went to get public records on the sleeping band from the courts. The court deputies or the court officials called the deputies and demanded I leave the building, and they threatened me, and I said no. I said, no, I'm not going to leave the building. If you want to have me arrested for making a Public Records Act request, I'd be amused to see what happens with that one in court. And they eventually backed off. But, you know, it's rather intimidating to have people with guns and badges. Anyway, this first incident you're about to hear in the police department was the day after, and it actually went pretty smoothly. And so I'm really playing it as a kind of an introduction to what happened next, and I'll be talking about that.
Trying to do, or what kind of information are you trying to get?
This is a records request. It's,
and I'm talking to Yon Golder, who is also John Golder, is also making a Public Records Act request. And this is really the real issue or the real story that we're telling tonight in this segment of the show, on behalf of a woman named Linda LeMaster, who we've had on the show. She's the chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force. She's been a community activist for 3 or 4 decades here in Santa Cruz. She's poor. She's disabled. And her car was seized by the police department for having 5 tickets after it was booted and taken away, and apparently illegitimately, because at least several of those so-called tickets weren't legitimate tickets, according to rather prima facie evidence that I've seen, namely she was given a ticket for having an unregistered vehicle when she had a registered vehicle, and the date of the ticket post-dates the date of her registration. She had a registration. She had renewed her registration several weeks before. She didn't have the tags on the car, but the ticket is for, you know, not just having tickets displayed, but for not having the registration. Anyway, Golder was there to get some documentation from the police department about what was going on with her case.
Aimed at a number of different state agencies regarding Linda LeMaster's vehicle impound. And it's deeply we're deeply researching the process and the legality of the process that they ordinarily use during vehicle impoundments.
This is when a car gets booted for too many tickets.
Yeah, booted is actually called immobilization. Towing is impoundment means they take it and they put it behind locked gates take it away from you. And impoundment is what's called a prejudgmental seizure. They do it without due process. It's like punishment that your car is some instrumentality of crime, or there's a lot of reasons you can be impounded, but in the case of parking, it's a little fuzzy. It's like they say, well, you're a serious habitual offender of parking. And so for a few dollars and lost parking meter cost, they're taking the car away that may be worth thousands of dollars.
Right. And the worker is back.
Okay.
And she shows Young that she's received a copy of your...
She nodded silently to show that she had received a copy and date stamped it and whatnot. So, yeah, it looks like your stuff is coming up, Robert.
All right. Excellent. Okie doke, and that's 450. And let's see here.
You haven't been formally charged.
What's that?
You haven't been formally charged. That's not. It doesn't say you owe that much.
That's true. It's a little note that says 450. I think the woman behind the counter is reluctant to speak on the case, which, you know, is her prerogative. But I do want to.
And what's happening here is that instead of saying, sir, you owe $450 for this and this, the woman behind the counter does not want to be recorded, so she's sending me these little notes that are telling me things, but not talking.
You know, the name of the person I'm talking to. So, have you got a card for me with your name on it?
Pardon?
What's your name? Right, and I want to know your name, too. No offense. It's just a matter of, you know, procedure, that's all. Nothing personal. Still waiting. Okay.
And I didn't get her name, just her badge number, which is inappropriate. She's a public employee. She has a requirement to give her name as well. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, the booting. I saw a car around the corner, and they have two boots on him.
Uh-huh.
I know I was targeted because they're all ticked off that I have two vehicles at my place and I'm one person. It's like, you know, mind your own damn business.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sea Ranch was sued because they booted a tourist. There was a medical emergency and they couldn't get...
I'm not sure what you're talking about, Madison.
Sea Ranch is a town up on the coast about the booting. And the Sea Ranch was sued because someone had a medical emergency, a tourist. They couldn't get in their car and get to their medical situation. If someone died, and the Sea Ranch was sued for millions of dollars because of a boot on the car.
Bad boots, yeah.
Yeah. I think they should just be gone.
Okay.
Out of here. You know what I mean? We have micromanagement and all this wandering and horrid. This is the absolute most horrid park department, and I've been in the business since I was 11 years old I've ever seen run. The head ranger's riding around on a bicycle breaking stuff up. Got the kids running rampant like a bunch of wild Indians, extremely unsafe at their recreation events. I mean, I was shocked.
Let me get back to the.
I went to see some of what's going on with the park department. It's like they all need to be canned.
Well, let me get.
And I've been city, county, state, and fed.
Thank
and the
you.
Top agencies, top departments.
Thanks, Madison. I'm gonna get back to this tape because I haven't got much time. But maybe another time we can pursue that subject. Thank you.
So, again, can I have your name? Do you have a card that I could use? Okay, is your supervisor here?
Badge number?
Badge number. I got that. She gave me her badge number, but that's fine. Okay. And, again, I'm sorry, one more time. Can you repeat that badge number for me?
328.
Okay. And your position is?
Administrative.
Okay, administrative. You got a pin? We don't have a pin here.
It's here, Robert. Here it is.
Yep. Okay. Administrative assistant. I'm just writing all this down here. Although it would have been simpler just to get the name of the person involved. Okay. How's it going?
Hello.
Well, I said a sergeant. No, maybe a sergeant walked through with a uniform on. And the Administrative Assistant 328 is on the cell phone, and I'm prepared to pay up, except she's disappeared again. I'm not sure.
She's right over there.
I know. She's there. I have a $20 bill just waiting for her, and she's apparently not. She has some other business to take care of, or is extremely reluctant. The tape recorder kind of makes him skittish, I guess. It's unfortunate.
You really try to get her out.
So, it's like a busy day in the lobby. There's a couple of guys, actually three guys, and it's like some official person here, and another woman is waiting for the.
I'm sure you know.
A man is waiting. Somebody's waiting. We're all waiting here. We'll see where we're at. Still waiting at 11:33. And I'll turn this off while we're waiting because it is taking a while. PlayStation is going to be closed on Thanksgiving and Friday for those of you who want to use the PlayStation. And reports, photocopying reports cost 25 cents a page, 50 cents if they're double-sided. Double-sided ledger size are $1 per sheet. Color copies are $1.
As you can see, I'm getting a little desperate reading the notices at the police department while waiting for this administrative assistant 328 or whatever her number is to come back and give me the document that's supposed to be sitting at the window. It's supposed to be sitting there 24 hours before. They're not supposed to be dropping into a paranoid fit every time they're recorded either. And they should give out their names, their positions, their superiors' names when asked. But, of course, that isn't happening at our police department, which is unfortunate. And I'm going on about the notices I'm seeing posted.
I should say in the public areas of his office waiting to be...
And I'm talking about the notice here that is posted that bans tape recording, which actually began with Mayor Fitzmaurice when back in 2001 when he didn't like our sitting in the outer public part of his offices recording because we started recording because they started threatening us and we wanted to get a record of their threats as we waited to have homeless people addressed and to be able to talk to city council members and make appointments with them way back then.
And Mayor Fitzmaurice began accusing us of being disruptive, so we started tape recording to indicate, no, we weren't being disruptive, as a sort of the best evidence. Shortly thereafter, Fitzmaurice posted rules banning tape recording, and that ban has been up for the last 7 years. Of course, it's unconstitutional and has nothing to do with your real rights and powers as a citizen, so here we are. Start again. Go ahead.
And you know that little, in the parking lot, there were
Bernard
people
Klitzner.
Eat on the tables by the herb room?
Oh, here we are. We're back. I'm sorry. Go ahead. So I've got some money for you, 328, if you're ready.
Okay. Do you have the...
The amount of money is $450, and there's a 20 for you. And money is being taken.
Yeah.
And we'll see. And Bernard is going to give his story later. Well, I gave it, and now it's being received. I mean, I don't wish to mischaracterize anything here. That's fine. It did take an extra trip because yesterday the same person refused to wait on me. The same person who declines to give her name, but does give her badge number.
There's that. The sheriff's department up in Arizona refuses to take cash for payments for records requests.
Really? Okay, I've got the records requests and the change. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's see how things are with this. Now we're going to continue the interview with Bernard Klitzner outside about an incident that happened about a month or so ago at Staff of Life.
Yes, I was with my son, and Officer Wallace...
That's Park Ranger Wallace to you, right. Sir.
Right, was sitting there. Hey, Jan, I want you to hear.
And we're outside of the beautiful $50,000 police sculpture.
I want Jan to hear.
Or is it $80,000? Is it $30,000? I'm not sure. It was a number of 10 or more G's.
Right, so I was, I was with my son and off in the Park Ranger Wallace was sitting and eating his food right there with all the tables right near the herb room there. And so I pointed out to my son that this Wallace park, this ranger, and I said it really loud, that he disturbs homeless people every night. Well, Wallace looked at me from about, oh, maybe 50 feet, above, 50 feet away. Mm-hmm. He says to me, move along.
Uh-huh.
And I says, no, you know, you're not the boss, you know, here.
To which he replied?
He replied, you're harassing me, and you had better move on.
To which he replied?
He said, yes, sir. And
you
left.
You did move along. You chicken. You. So you treated him as the
yes,
boss.
Yes, sir, could be considered a confession that you had been harassing.
You are. You and your son are harassing the chief ranger of the Santa Cruz Parks and Rec Department. This is a serious matter. I'm going to be taking it up with authorities. You have comments about our Ranger Wallace?
Do you want to talk about my situation first? Yeah. Actually, the definition of harassment would be to... would not fit into what you said because it was a single comment,
right?
You know, and it wasn't directed at him. It was directed at your son. Who it's directed to is pretty specific in how close it happened to someone else. And of course, it was a totally public space. You are allowed, and you can easily see this in the free speech rights. You're absolutely allowed to have any opinion you want and express it any time you want. There are times when it's inappropriate, but certainly in a public space.
We were on the sidewalk.
Yeah, that's a public space, and you're absolutely entitled to express your opinion, regardless. You can even curse if you want.
Hold up a big sign that says Ranger Wallace, harasser of the homeless, and point it in his direction.
Yeah, you could do something like that. That's free speech. The free speech laws are very... You know, they've been explored so many different ways, it's pretty easy to determine it. There's nothing Wallace can do about anytime some officer doesn't like what you say, you say, well, that's always at it. Well, that's my opinion, which is protected by the First, get that, the First Amendment.
And not to mention the California Constitution.
Well, right. It's the first.
Article 1, I think.
Article 1 in the California Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Not just the First Amendment of the Federal Constitution, but the California Constitution.
You just say it's your opinion, and that's fine. They cannot get you if you add the words. That is my opinion.
Assuming you're not screaming at him from 2 feet away.
Well, yeah, you can't be in the guy's personal space and.
Well,
we were
about 30 or 40 feet.
Yeah, but his space extends to the entire city, Bernard.
You don't like my opinion? Plug your ears. You're free not to listen. You're free to ignore my comments.
And did you have some other comments about Ranger Wallace or Chief Ranger Wallace?
Well, the guy looks like he's in great shape. I think he's having a lot of fun bounding out there through the woods writing citations. I'd love to do an encounter with the guy regarding what they're supposedly doing with people's goods. I want to talk. Was it Mike, the guy you said that might have attended our meeting today?
Huh?
Rick, the guy with the flowers.
Mike. Yes, yeah. Merriweather Mike, a musical guy.
People have said, what can you do to keep these guys from destroying the equipment, taking the equipment? The important thing is how they value stuff that they can claim is abandoned.
Because how can you stop rangers from taking the equipment?
Well, anybody. It doesn't matter. Okay. Yeah. If you have your name and some kind of contact information on the equipment, that's number one, because that means it's yours, okay? And number two is to put something, a statement of value in the equipment, somewhere where it would be obvious where it would be found on the outside, that this equipment in total, you know, is worth as long as it's over $300, they can't do what they're doing.
In theory.
Huh?
According to the law.
According to the law, if it's worth over $300, they have to try and notify.
But in fact, Parks and Rec destroys everything it finds, and that has been the policy for the last 4 years.
If you've got that statement and you've got a picture of your stuff or whatever, then that should
be illegal.
That should offer them pause.
Our police officers would never violate the law. You people obviously aren't thinking straight. Anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, goodbye. Hey, I'll fine.
And that's just about the end of Bathurst Spears Broadsides. We have, I was going to play the more dramatic encounter that actually happened 15 minutes later when the three of us, the Los Tres Amigos, the three musty turds, or musketeers, if you will, came on down to the parking, parking ticket payment windows on, I guess it's Locust Street down there, about a block from Pacific Avenue, and what happened as we attempted to serve a Public Records Act request on Claudia Carlson, the boss there, and how she responded by calling the police to give it away. I'm going to be going on with that on Sunday. And I remind you before I go that on Saturday at 4 o'clock, Dark Days, that's the film I wanted to look into. Dark Days is going to be playing at the Loudon Nelson Cinema, if you will. That's at Loudon Nelson Center. And it's free. It's a movie we're going to be showing. And I'll just read you a little bit about it from the Wikipedia. And you'll also be able to come and support Ending the Sleeping Ban. And if you're a homeless person, you can talk about tickets you've gotten. If you're not a homeless person, you can come and volunteer and ask what you can do. Dark Days, according to Wikipedia, is a documentary made by Mark Singer, a British filmmaker, follows a group of people living in an abandoned section of the New York City Underground Railway system. When he relocated from London to Manhattan, Mark Singer was struck by the number of homeless people he had seen throughout the city. He had befriended a good number of New York's homeless, and later, after hearing of people living underground in abandoned tunnel systems, he met and became close to a set of folks living in the Freedom Tunnel community, stretching from north from Penn Station past Harlem. After living with them for a number of months, he decided to create a documentary in order to help them financially. The film's crew consisted of subjects themselves, who rigged up makeshift lighting and Steadicam dollies, and learned to use a 16mm camera with black and white Kodak film. Singer himself had never been a filmmaker before and saw the production of Dark Days as a means of gaining better accommodation for the residents of the tunnel. The post-production process took years as financial difficulties created delays, as did Singer's insistence on creative control to protect the tunnel residents. During filming, Amtrak announced they would be forcibly evicting the homeless living in the tunnels. This announcement, plus the police presence backing the decision, prompted Singer and photographer Margaret Morton to go to the Coalition for the Homeless for help. Eventually, Singer and Morton managed to secure housing vouchers from the Department of Housing and Urban Development for the film's subjects, which enabled them to move out of the tunnels and into their own apartments. The film features music by DJ Shadow, including excerpts from Introducing, as well as his album with Uncle. Melissa Niedich was the editor of the film. Cinevision, a New York City camera shop, supplied Singer with cameras for the 2.5 years of filming. When Singer ran out of money for film, Kodak supplied free damaged film for the project. Dark Days was released in 2000, was nominated for several film festival awards. The film won many of these, including Best Documentary at the Independent Spirit Awards, Best Documentary Nonfiction Film at the L.A. Film Critics Association Awards, Senior Programmer's Pick at the SXSW Film Festival Awards, and 3 Sundance Film Festival Awards in 2000. Audience Award for Best Documentary, Cinematography Award for Documentary, and the Freedom of Expression Award. So again, that's Dark Days, 4 o'clock, Loudon Nelson Center, day after tomorrow, Saturday. Come on down, check it out. And I believe tonight they're showing a film, the Guerrilla Theater is showing a film up at the Tree Sit on campus. Not quite sure what that film is, and I bet if I went to indiebay.org I could find out. And I encourage you to check that out, too, for different stuff. Let's see. A Little Bit of So Much Truth, it's called. And it's at the Tree Sit. Starts at 8 o'clock. It runs from 8 to 10. Should be starting right now. That's at the Science Hill Tree Sit, Red Hill Autonomous Zone, UC Santa Cruz. When the people of Oaxaca decided they'd had enough of bad government, they didn't take their story to the media. They took the media in the summer of 2006. A broad-based, nonviolent, a broad-based, nonviolent, a popular uprising exploded on the southern Mexican state, in the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca. Some compared it to the Paris Commune, while others called it the first Latin American revolution of the 21st century. But it was after the people's use of the media that truly made history in Oaxaca. A 90-minute documentary, A Little Bit of So Much Truth, captures the unprecedented media phenomenon that emerged when tens of thousands of school teachers, housewives, indigenous communities, health workers, farmers, and students took 14 radio stations and one TV station into their own hands, using them to organize, mobilize, and ultimately defend their grassroots struggle for social, cultural, and economic justice. Beautiful, powerful, dramatic, magnificent, provides a remarkably deep and penetrating look into the people who made up the movement, everyone interested in Mexico, in teachers and education, in workers' movements, in indigenous people, in the state of our world, and the struggle for social justice should see the video, according to Mexican Labor and Analysis. Again, that's the film up today, Tuesday the 29th, up on campus, 8 o'clock, Science Hill, Tree Sit, Red Hill Autonomous Zone. Starting right now, you can still catch most of it if you head up there. Who knows? Maybe I'll head up there and see what it looks like. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to play a little music to let us out with. And Uncle Dennis should be arriving shortly with From the Cream to the Dregs. Come in again if you want to catch my show. Tune in again on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning, maybe a little earlier. And you'll be catching me when I do my long show, or I'll be seeing you on Saturday at the either at the Human Rights Organization meeting, Firefly Cafe, 131 Front Street at 2 o'clock, or 2 hours later at the movie Dark Days, 4 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson Center, to end the sleeping ban and get the city on the right track. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides.
Look at the street. Left a widowed wife, you know, that grabs at people's heartstrings too. Unfortunately, Officer Faulkner's widow, Maureen Faulkner, has gone around the country saying things that simply are not true about this case. You know, she certainly suffered a terrible tragedy, but it has led her to appeal to some of the worst instincts of, you know, a lot of white racists who want to see killed, even if it's clear that.
For tuning in to www.freakradio.com. Ahora voy a comenzar a ver si puedo o no puedo. A ver si puedo cantar o a medio verso me quedo. Ahora voy a comenzar a ver si puedo o no puedo. A ver si puedo cantar o a medio verso me quedo.
Soy pescador.
And welcome
to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s, and we'll just let the Allman Brothers jam on there for a little bit. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We'll be here till 11 o'clock with all kinds of crazy music. We've got the Earth First Update at 9 o'clock, and of course, our Spotlight Group of the Week coming up at 10. I do want to remind folks to, if you've got a little while and a warm jacket, get on up to UCSC right now. Starting at 8 o'clock on Science Hill will be a video presentation by the Gorilla Drive-In and the Santa Cruz Oaxaca Solidarity. The film is Un Poquito de Tanta Verdad, a little bit of much truth. It's going to take place on Science Hill. How to get there? Well, take a city bus or park in the north remote parking lot. Any of the buses 10, 15, or 16 will get you there. Get off at Science Hill, and the screening will take place between the physical sciences and the science engineering library building. So get on up there to UCSC right now for the Gorilla Drive-In Theater. We'll be opening the Brew of the Week here in just a little bit, but until then, here's more of the Allman Brothers live at the Ludlow Garage, and back in 1970.